The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rand.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, when there's trouble, you know where to go. Far Sector, plus Vin Diesel versus Nicolas Cage versus Carol Channing. No, wait. Scratch that last one. Anyway, Superman's back with an all-new number one. Rand's getting absolution and sacrifice, and we all scream for ice cream. These UFOs and them there hills full of them Kentucky goblins, but we's going to have a podcast anyway because Major Spoilers podcast is on the air or something.
Welcome to issue 1015 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you for downloading and checking us out this week. Hey, look, everybody, Rand is back. Rand, welcome back. It has been far too long since you've been on this show.
Yes, happy to be here.
We've got a lot to get to in this episode. Rodrigo is out this week. Family issues, nothing too serious. It's all positive things. Maybe he'll talk about that next week. But until then, we wish him and everybody well. And we also get into some news. While his run on Bloodshot may be in limbo, Vin Diesel is set to return to the Riddick franchise in the upcoming Riddick Furia. Or is it Furia? Because that's who it's for. It's Furia. Diesel will star in and produce the new film, which will be directed by David Tui, who directed the first three films in the franchise. Here's what we know about the official Furia film. Furia finds Riddick finally returning to his homeworld, a place he barely remembers, and one he fears might be left in ruins by the Necromongers. But there he finds other Furians fighting for their existence against a new enemy. And some of these Furians are more like Riddick than he could have ever imagined. There is currently no official release date for Riddick Furia.
I think that's pronounced Furia.
And it could be. He finds out that everybody loves to dress up in animal costumes.
Yeah, it's totally what it is.
Are you guys fans of the Riddick franchise or no?
My wife loves Pitch Black. I have no use for the Riddick franchise. I feel like there are some stories that feel like they take all of the bits and pieces of a comic book superhero / supervillain tale and throw them on the, you know, big screen and do something different with them. And I don't know, Riddick just feels an awful lot like, hey man, what if Drizzt was also an X-Man in space?
Yeah.
And just like,
when did that first movie come out?
2003
or 4 or something like that. I remember seeing that. Chronicles of Riddick came out in 2004. I remember seeing that
came before Chronicles of Riddick.
Oh yeah, right. Pitch Black came out in 2000, right. I remember seeing Pitch Black and I enjoyed that enough for what it was. But then when the other sequels started coming out, I had zero interest in it.
That's me. I saw Pitch Black in the theater and that was fine. And I have not seen the other films. Again, you know, no offense to anyone that saw them. I just, you know, never got around to them.
Yeah, no, I think it's cool that people are willing to bet on this one. And I think
Wesley Snipes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Bet on Blade.
But I don't know. There's something about this that I don't know, makes me smile a little bit because here's a franchise that's 23 years old and there's only four films that have come out of it. And Vin Diesel still believes in it enough. And David Tui still believes in it enough that they want to continue with it. So I think that's all really cool, especially considering that is this last Fast and Furious 10. Is it the last one in the series?
Oh God, who knows?
Yeah. I don't know. And I was really hoping that we would see more Vin Diesel as Bloodshot, but nothing's been announced on that. So there you go.
Bloodshot.
It was a fine movie. Yeah.
It was definitely a movie, but you know what they are getting more of? More noir. Because everybody, including Steven and I, liked that whole Nicolas Cage as Spider-Man noir in the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse animated movie. Say it, Steven.
It's the greatest superhero movie ever made.
Sure. So much so that Sony is looking to take that Spider-Man noir character to Amazon as dun, 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 a live action series. Now, we don't know anything about it,
really other than that. So, you know, we know Spider-Man Noir is set in a 1930s New York. The main character is in the comics, Peter Parker. We know that it will not be a Peter Parker in the series. I don't know if Nick Cage is too old to play.
I honestly don't think that Nick Cage is going to be in the show at all.
I don't think so either, but it'd be interesting if they did something weird and wacky and crazy with it.
I have a feeling this is going to be more like the comic book version of Spider-Man Noir rather than the animated movie Spider-Man Noir.
Well, in the comic book version of Spider-Man Noir, is Peter Parker or a
Peter Parker. But I have a feeling that they're going to make it grim and dark and gritty like the comic book series and not slightly out of touch with some punch pal zoom that we saw in the animated series. I don't know.
I mean, like,
I want to see Nicolas Cage in the live action film of Peter B. Parker.
That would be interesting. I would pay money to see that.
Right now, you know what I mean?
Every time I look at Peter B. Parker, I just see who's the guy from The Office who just played Mr. Fantastic?
Oh, Krasinski. Yeah.
Yeah, married to Emily Blunt. Every time I see Peter B. Parker, I just see Jim looking at the camera, and I'm like, I want to see that schmuck play Peter B. Parker.
They almost animated him in Spider-Verse as if they thought Krasinski was going to do the voice.
Oh, really? Right? Okay.
No, that's the way it felt to me when I saw it. You know what I mean?
So yeah. If you guys want to see, I mean, Nicolas Cage has some hot films and has some films that don't run as hot. But if you guys want to see a really good Nicolas Cage movie that came out in 2022, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent is fantastic. Nicolas Cage plays Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
And it is insane.
Now that Adam West is no longer with us and William Shatner is no longer a person that I have any interest in listening to, I believe that overacting and pretending to be a heightened version of yourself is now officially known as Nicolas Caging, because that movie is a hoot and a half.
Yeah. Have you seen that, Rand?
I have not seen it. If I weaken and get a month of stars so that I can, watch the third season of whatever that, I can't remember the name of the show that's coming out next week. What's that?
Who's in it?
Oh, it doesn't matter. But I'm saying that, you know, right now. And so yeah. If I drop the $5, on my list of things to watch.
Yeah, it is.
I don't have free HBO weekends anymore, by the way. How come?
Probably because it'd be too hard to turn that on the streaming, because I think everybody would want that on the streaming service as opposed to the cable.
There's like a switch. Just flip the switch.
I don't know. I don't know if that. I mean, I agree with you that I also used to enjoy HBO free, not weekends. Wasn't it a whole week of HBO?
For me, it always seemed like it was a 3-day weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Oh, I remember it was like a week.
That's how I got my George Carlin stuff.
Yeah, when we were like in college, I remember it was on for a week, and I was like taping everything for like a week that was on. Because it was like, this is my entertainment for the next year. And then they turned it off Sunday night after their big, you know, hoopla. Anyway.
Party Down was the show that I couldn't remember the name of that is having a much delayed third season.
What show is it?
Party Down.
I'm not familiar with that one.
My goodness. It's was a comedy, came out in the early maybe 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it had two seasons and then was canceled in the intervening, you know, decade. You know, I mean, it's Adam Scott, Ken Marino, Ryan Hansen, Martin Starr, Lizzie Kaplan, Megan Mullally, Jane Lynch.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
So
was the cast. And then every single episode, these guys were caterers in Hollywood. So every episode had really famous actors playing themselves.
Oh, all right. I may have to check it out then.
Yeah. And the third season's coming out next week. And it's, you know, like I said, it's like no one could believe that they're actually doing a third season. It's the creator is the guy that did Veronica Mars.
Oh, okay.
Well, that guy.
I can do his name. It's also the singer for, never mind.
The Mountain Goats.
Rob Thomas. No, it's yeah.
Bruno Mars.
The name of the guy from no.
The Martian Manhunter.
Oh my god. I can't remember. Matchbox 20. That's
Marvin the Martian.
Oh, okay. All right.
Computers, they're so naughty.
You guys don't know this, but I said that out loud because my wife, who's like two rooms away, I yelled out Rob Thomas because I knew that she would, you know, provide me. So, he's working me like Cyrano de Bergerac here. It's, you know,
oh, that's fine.
Dear listeners, you can join this conversation about these stories and a whole lot more over on our Discord server. You can join the Major Spoilers Discord server for free. We'd love to see you join our growing community of awesome spoilerites. And if you listen to the Major Spoilers pre-show, we may be doing something special in that Discord server in the very near future. So stay tuned for that. Get in now so you do not miss out. All right, let us get to some reviews. Reviews. I'm going to start off first this week with Blue Book, number one from James Tynion IV, Michael Avon Oeming. This is being released through Dark Horse Comics, but it originally appeared in James Tynion's Tiny Onion Substack, I want to say a year ago or at least a year and a half ago. Blue Book is basically them retelling great UFO stories. And this first issue starts off by starting to tell the first part of the Betty and Barney Hill abduction story, where they are being chased by the UFO leading up to their abduction and being taken into the UFO proper, which will be in issue number two.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting. If you are a fan of Michael Avon Oeming's art, you're in for a treat here, because not only do you get the Avon Oeming style, but it is all done in monotone. So everything is blue, white, and black, and to kind of go along with the Blue Book feel on this. And so it's really interesting to look at the fact that they're trying to take facts about Betty and Barney Hill and also mix in the what really happened with their UFO abduction stuff, I think is interesting. Honestly, if you're not a fan of Tynion and Oeming, then this is probably something you can pass, because quite honestly, in the first arc of the Betty and Barney Hill stuff, and it goes on to do other stories as well, I think most UFO enthusiasts already know the Betty and Barney Hill story, or at least most casual people, I think, would know the Betty and Barney Hill story. And so this kind of presents a lot of that information that it's already well known. But personally, I think in the way that it's told, I think the pacing that it is being told and the fact that the art is and coloring is fantastic in this piece, I think it's worth picking up. It is a $5.99. It's a $5 book, $4.99 cover price. If you already had subscribed to the Substack and you've read it and you don't need a physical or digital copy, you probably don't need to do this. But for people that don't subscribe to the Substacks of a lot of comic creators these days to see what they're working on, then I think this is worth picking up. I really enjoy this a lot. There's a backup story that talks about I forget what monster it is. It's kind of like Mothman, but not Mothman. It's on Coney Island. I forget what that one is. That is a backup story in here as well. That's also well told. I don't remember reading that over on the Substack. So you get a little bit of new stuff, at least in my mind, in Blue Book number one, out this week from Dark Horse Comics. I'm giving it 5 out of 5 slices of meatloaf, just because I like creators doing indie works that don't have to be tied to a big publisher. Certainly Dark Horse is a big publisher, but they're coming in after the fact. Dark Horse right now is releasing several of the Substack creators stuff. They are also working a lot with Comixology Originals to release the physical versions of comics. From this, what are we going to do in 2021, 2022? Let's go to Substack and let's create comics there. Is, I think, an interesting idea. It's not quite web comics, but it kind of falls into that realm. It's interesting. And to see it finally come into print, I think, is really cool. So that is Blue Book number one from Dark Horse Comics.
The Airborne Frogman?
Yes, it is that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that was interesting, because I didn't know about that character. And I think it will continue into the next issue. I think, if I remember correctly,
Island Flying Man,
the Betty and Barney Hill story, I think, is probably 4 issues worth of content, if I remember correctly. So there you
go.
Does
it get up to the point where their son Bam Bam Hill arrives?
No.
Starts a band with pebbles next door?
Nope. Doesn't do that at all. But Matthew, please tell us about Superman number one. Oh, Superman finally getting his own comic and getting a number one issue with that. It's out today from DC Comics.
It feels like the kind of thing they should have done in 1940.
40, yeah, at least.
Or
finally, Superman is getting his moment in
87. 2016. I mean, there are many times that you could have done this. But yeah, Superman Volume 6, number one, written by Josh Williamson. Art by Jamal Campbell, who I think also does our trade paperback this week, doesn't he?
I believe so, yes.
Thinking of Jamal Igel.
Nope, Jamal Campbell.
No, Jamal Campbell. Yeah, same guy. Okay, so he's drawing the Superman.
Cool.
Did I drop you guys?
Yeah, for a minute. Yeah, so what else? What else can you tell us besides Jamal Campbell arting it up and Joshua Williamson writing it up?
Meatloaf.
I think Matthew's totally out of it there, Randy. We can hear you.
Do we have to take over?
Yeah, maybe. Why don't we skip over to you, Rand, really quick? You did a couple of trades.
I did. In late 2022, Peter Milligan, who's a Vertigo mainstay, he's been around for quite a while. He came roaring back through AWA with two short comics, and they've both been, one was collected in January and one just came out a week or so ago. Those are Absolution with art by Mike Diodato Jr. and Sacrament by Marcello Fuson. These are both artists that Milligan has worked with in the past. I'm a huge Peter Milligan fan from way back. Some of my favorite comics in the 90s were comics like Screamer and Enigma and Shade the Changing Man.
You're the only other person who has ever heard of Screamer.
Oh, Screamer is my master's thesis, my seminary master's thesis. had a huge, had a whole chapter on Screamer.
Oh my God!
Which is nice because obviously with titles like Absolution and Sacrament, I was kind of eager to see what Peter Milligan was cooking up because a lot of his work does have theological themes. These are both. They're both fairly short. They're both under 120 pages. They both are about kind of dark future worlds. They both do deal with religious themes. Sacrament is directly theological and religious in its plot. Absolution is the religious themes are more metaphorical. I would say to start with, like, Sacrament was billed as like The Exorcist meets Alien. And I guess kind of, it's definitely more Exorcist than Alien. I would say it's more like Exorcist in outer space. And this is a story where I feel like it has a really fantastic setup, and I was not as pleased with the knockdown, if you will. It's kind of a solid if well-used hook, which is the priest who has lost his faith. What makes this really interesting is that this is taking place in outer space. It's we've left Earth. And so the idea is, you know, we've left Earth and we've left religion behind along with this. And certainly we've left Christianity behind, but this guy is a Catholic priest. And the idea is that there's concerns that there is demon possession happening. And so in a panic, the people contact this illegal priest because he has experience with exorcism. Mm-hmm. And this guy has lost his faith. And so it's that classic idea, you know, of the priest who's lost his faith. And so it's bringing up lots of questions like, is this really demon possession, or is it just some sort of alien thing that we don't understand? Is there a God? If you know that you're bringing comfort and healing to your people, does it matter if it's real or not? Mm-hmm. All of this stuff. There's some really great, fun ideas. Like there's this thing called Transub, which is like a machine that you kind of, instead of, having communion take place with a wafer and wine, it's all about this machine that, stimulates your God locus, like the God button in your head that allows you to have these experiences. And of course, when they capture you, since it's illegal, they drill the God locus out of your head.
Oh, weird.
So there's all sorts of, so it's all really good stuff. None of it is sufficiently explored or explained as far as I was, I wanted more. It wasn't that it was bad. It just felt like it needed more issues. Like this would have been better as a longer series, I think. I felt like, the last issue, it didn't do it for me as much as I wanted it to. I would give that 3.5 slices. Moving on to Absolution, I was more pleased with. It's a really solid take on our current obsession with violence and social media and cancel culture. And in this case, literally, because in this story, it's in the future and violent criminals are made to perform acts of violence for an online audience. And if they get enough approval points, then they are absolved.
Oh.
If they're not, they are killed.
Okay.
So, and of course, you know, the genius of this from a writing perspective is that these characters can't possibly predict what might please or anger their viewing audience.
Mm-hmm.
On some cases, being incredibly brutal and cruel might get you points, whereas, you know, with a different audience, that same action might, you know, lead to disapproval. Another interesting kind of science fiction element here that Milligan brings is that in this world, we understand what causes tendencies toward violence, and we're able to understand them psychologically and biomedically, and we're able to cure them. So the main character we're following had the parts of her brain that led to her violent sadism removed.
Yeah.
So the procedure that frankly made her no longer a danger to the world has also rendered her unable to easily perform the acts of violence that might lead to her absolution.
Oh no.
Oh, it's very cleverly put together.
Kind of like a Black Mirror kind of thing.
Yeah. And you're kind of in her head the whole time, you know? So you're in, so, you know, this, you know, was, and again, I would say not only was this, I think, more thought out from beginning to end, but it also, they're both stories of the same length. And this story is perfect for the length that it was given. The art, both artists did a fantastic job, but Diodato's page layout and art are just perfectly matched to this story. It's really, really great. So I would give this 4.5 slices.
Cool. Very cool.
There you go.
I kind of dig what's coming out of AWA Studios. It stands for Artists, Writers, and Artisans, is the name of the company. Started in 2018 by Axel Alonso and Bill Jimenez. And I think one other person that I can't think of off the top of my head. And they've been doing a bang up job. They really got a lot of unique titles that come out of that company. And it's, you know, we were talking a minute ago about it. You could go to Substack and you can see creators doing stuff however they want, what they want on Substack. But then we can look at smaller publishers like AWA, and they're doing some really cool stuff. Matthew, didn't you just review Erratic this week?
Yes, Erratic, the issue, year 4 or 5 of the second arc of Erratic. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that one looks pretty good. There's a lot of stuff. So if you're tired of Marvel and DC, there are other publishers out there for you to check out. But let's now go back to Matthew and see if DC is worth sticking around with that final debut of Superman.
Right. So the Superman character, they're like, hey, we think this guy's going to be something good. So they've given him his own book. Superman number 1 with art by Jamal Campbell, written by Josh Williamson, comes out right now today, which is to say yesterday to you. Hello, future people. But it is part of what's called the Dawn of DC.
Now, this is all the stuff that's coming out after Lazarus Planet, or is this something else?
I believe.
Because I think Lazarus Planet wrapped up this week as well.
That rolls out of Lazarus Planet, which is to say, I think we just actually also finished Dark Crisis on Infinite Earths, but we also finished like 5 other things. So, I mean, I don't know.
Well, the One Minute War is still going on. So,
One Minute War is a war that only took 1 minute. So, yeah, the Dawn of DC starts with some new number ones. Superman, who, as you may know, has been out of the spotlight for a couple of years. This is Clark Kent Superman, as opposed to his son John, who had been Superman taking care of Metropolis. He's back. Clark is back. Lex is in jail. Clark is back at the Daily Planet writing for his editor-in-chief, Lois Lane. And he's, whoa, think about that. And he's dealing with some weird stuff, some new and different changes. And one of the things that has changed is that since Lex is in prison, LexCorp has been handed over to a new CEO, and that CEO is Superman. And they have redubbed it SuperCorp, and they have turned the big L on the roof into an S symbol. And Mercy, who is Lex Luthor's right-hand woman, is trying to convince him to step on board and be part of the new and different Super Corp. Now, something very important throughout this issue is we get two different narratives, one from Superman himself, including some flashbacks to his childhood in Smallville, and a very John Schneider-looking Pa Kent. Doesn't have a Band-Aid on his head, though, so I didn't recognize him at first. And we also get Lex talking about what's been going on. And Lex is trying everything he can to convince Superman to be on board with this, including creating an AI of Jor-El that he stole from the Fortress of Solitude and Superman's training equipment, working as the central hub of this new supercorp. But another villain comes into play, and that villain has an unexpected, whoa, crazy moment. Something completely unbelievable happens, and the last page of the issue is where the other shoe drops, where Luthor, who has been in jail, just talking to himself, is like, well, Superman, you don't get it. You're not dealing with your enemies anymore. You're dealing with mine. And that is a really interesting switch. Luthor is apparently legitimately wanting to work with Superman, and whoever is in the shadows doing the thing that happens to, actually, I think there's two, if I'm reading the last panel correctly, classic Superman villains sort of kind of in play here, getting a whole new thing. Whoever that is not targeting Superman, but in fact targeting Luthor. And so it's an interesting first issue. Josh Williamson just came off of a long run of Flash. I think he did something else in between, but you know, I'm like 2 years behind in the universe, but Josh is also the guy who comes in and looks at things and goes, huh, Geoff Johns made this up. Well, I'm going to twist it around and do something different. And I really appreciate this issue. Most of all, I love the fact that it ends with the coming to Superman in the next year thing that DC used to do, where they give you a little, you know, coming attraction trailer of what's going to happen and who may or may not be in play. And this emphasizes that we're going to be seeing Superman in stories with more of a horror tinge, which I think is a really underserved modern premise.
Yeah, so, I haven't read this issue, but knowing what is on the cover of upcoming issues, isn't it Parasite is the big bad at the end of this issue?
Oh, man, you gave it away.
I mean, here's my concern based on everything that you've said, except for the let's turn LexCorp over to Superman. This mm-hmm. sounds an awful lot like the first Tomorrowverse animated movie, Superman Man of Tomorrow, where Parasite is the villain and Lex is trying to just be this good guy working with Superman. And and here's the other thing, too, is Superman is back in Metropolis. And everyone has forgotten that Superman and Clark Kent are the same person.
Yes.
And do they just hand wave that away? Because that is the other thing that is like,
that is not addressed in this issue at all.
Interesting.
So wherever that resolution took place, it was not here.
You didn't read the issue where Superman talked to Mephisto and they did the whole thing.
Lois to
Necron.
Yeah.
Necron. First of all, I'm insulted that you think Necron is the equivalent of Mephisto. Second of all, I'm insulted that you don't remember Blaze. Third of all, it's fun to say Mephisto. And fourth and finally, you can compare it to those DC animated movies all you want. I don't like them, so I don't watch them.
Oh, they're actually really good. I think you would enjoy them a lot.
Yeah, but you say that.
No, I think honestly, If you are super frustrated by, you know, TV adaptations or especially stuff that was coming out from DC prior, the animated movies are fantastic, not only fantastic adaptations of certain comic book stuff. Flashpoint, I think they did a really good job of in the animated form, but like stories like the Bruce Lee, it's not Enter the Dragon, but Way of the Dragon, I think, or I'm sorry, Batman Way of the Dragon. That is a fantastic retro 1970s animated movie that DC put out that nobody talks about. It is, they consistently have really, really good stuff. And that's why instead of James Gunn in charge of their movie universe, I wanted, now I can't think of his name, the guy in charge of DC Animated. I wanted him I wanted him to be in charge of the entirety of DC films because he understands the story and how things get connected together. And they do a fantastic job. So if you have been sleeping on DC Animated stuff, you need to go and watch that stuff. And Superman Man of Tomorrow is actually a very good movie that sets the framework for what they're currently doing with their continuity films. So,
yeah, but I don't want to.
You don't have to, but I would encourage you to.
Superman number one, as the first issue of this whole dawn of DC, I'm going to give it 4 slices of meatloaf. It's beautifully drawn. I really enjoy this take on Superman. I like his Lois. I like Jimmy, who gets kind of a look upgrade and actually looks like a hip young person of 2023. You know, I feel like the basics of everything I want to see in a Superman story is very, very well handled. And it gets a full half star for one important bit of information. So, you know, Lex Luthor.
I do know him, not personally. We're not on a first name basis.
Luthor is in prison, played by, you know, the kid from Smallville. But he's in prison, and this is an important detail. We see Luthor's uniform and his prisoner number. And no, it's not the same prisoner number as a Beagle Boy. I would have laughed at that. But it identifies him as Luthor, comma, A.
Alexei Luthor. So
his government name is Alexander.
Yeah, he does have his red hair coming to...
He does not have his red hair. I swear to God, if you make another Earth 2 reference...
I'm just saying, we know the multiverse is going to be a big deal with DC the going forward, right? So he is not Lex Luthor, he is a Luthor. Which Luthor is he? We don't know, but he is definitely a Luthor. I think that's very clever.
When you said, I am the future Flash... And I'm like, if your twist is based on where you place the comic,
you are number one.
All right, I quit. I'm going to bed. You finish this show, Rand. You make sure to punish it. 4 slices of meatloaf for Superman Volume 6, number one. Of all the Superman number ones I've read, it's one of them. And, you know, I feel like as new starts go, I have a little trust for Williamson based on what he did with Flash. I really have trust for the artist. Jamal Campbell rocks. So I want to see more of this Superman. I do want to know what happened to John. I do want to know what happened with all the weird stuff and the Bendis things that did, you know, that were there and then didn't make any sense. And you know, unlike Action Comics number 1000, Superman doesn't have a potato for a face. So that right there, worth the price of admission.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.